In today's podcast, we're speaking with Daniel Debeau, Senior Vice President of Emerging Technologies at Salesforce.com. We're excited to be speaking with Daniel, as he'll show us how he's applied lean principles in his work at Salesforce and his application of lean in the performance review world. Daniel has founded Ripple, a company that was acquired by Salesforce.com, which then turned into Work.com, which is an HR interaction platform. We're excited to be speaking with Daniel. Enjoy the podcast. This podcast is sponsored by HireVue. HireVue helps companies and recruiters find and hire talented people. We've created an entirely new kind of technology that we call a talent interaction platform. It's a SaaS platform that helps you find the best talent and promotes meaningful interaction with candidates using video and rich communications. For more information, please visit HireVue.com. We're speaking with Daniel Debeau today, who is the SVP of Emerging Technologies at Salesforce. And today we're going to be talking about what he's been up to since Ripple, his work with Work.com, and now in his role as SVP of Emerging Technologies. So welcome, Daniel.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Just to, level set, a couple of years ago, back in 2009, while you were still with Ripple, you had written me an email telling me about your interest in lean and how some of the things you guys were doing at Ripple. Maybe if you could share with us what you've been up to since then and the role, if any, lean has played, I guess, in your career.
Well, lots of questions in there. Sure. So Ripple was a company that I was a co-founder of with David Stein and a bunch of other folks. And after we started that company, after we had been part of being co-founders of another software company called WorkBrain. And that company was a pretty big traditional enterprise software business, but grew really fast from sort of six of us in 2000 to like almost 700 in 2007 and like 100 million in revenue. Grew really, really fast.
That's awesome.
And with that, yeah, it was amazing. And what we did was like workforce logistics. We did workforce management for very large employers like Target and Best Buy and American Airlines. And we did like labor scheduling and planning and time and attendance tracking at very large scale, very complex union stuff. So that was kind of how I got started in the software business. I did a whole bunch of roles there, not in product, but more like corporate development, marketing roles. And as the business started to get big, we started to create this huge backlog of bugs, basically. Very complicated software, very complicated systems. And it was kind of, our growth was kind of choking us. And that's when I started to get interested in lean. I had taken an MBA and read some operations courses, learned about the goal and stuff like that. But it wasn't until my CEO said, like, let's think about how to fix this, that it all started to come back. And I started to really read about lean, in particular, as it was applied to software and operations of the software business. So I remember meeting a woman named Mary Poppendike. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her.
Oh, I know Mary. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, of course. So I read her book, and I called her up and said, come help us. And she said, okay. And she came up, and it was great to get to know her. And we really started to do all the practices. And, the sort of short story is it was an amazing experience because we took our bug backlog and our throughput up down by like 90% inside of like, I think, 3 months or less, and increased throughput dramatically. And it really started to get into a much more kind of flow dynamic. And we did a lot of the practices that were laid out, mapped out the flows and started getting small teams to work on Kaizen, small improvements, making the changes every week. And it was sort of there when I witnessed the power of this kind of mindset because, I should also say, when Mary came up, I was like, Mary, I'm so excited. I bought your book for everybody here. And she said, why did you do that? I was like, I've never heard an author say that before. I said, I thought it was helpful. She said, oh, you should have just, told them to buy the Toyota Production System by Taichi Ono, and if they had read that, they would understand the philosophy of what needs to get done, and they would figure it out themselves, which I thought was great, very Yoda-like. So I read that book too, and it really inspired me to think about, just this philosophy as it applies to business, because I saw the power of it.
That's awesome.
That's how I got involved in it.
Well, since then, lean has really taken over. It's being really applied in every industry, and especially with the advent of the lean startup from Eric Ries, who we interviewed 2 weeks ago. In that interview, he shared with us how the GE has adopted the lean startup and is now calling it the internal operating system of GE, which is really fascinating. What are some of your thoughts on that? Have you read the book?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a little bit more background. I was so sort of into this lean startup stuff, reading Eric's blog before he wrote the book, actually, that I reached out to him as we were getting Ripple started. So after we sold WorkBrain, we sold it to Infor in 2007. Myself and one of the other co-founders, David Stein, started this company, Ripple, and it was really based around the idea of it was two strains, really. It was the strain of kind of social media and the way people were communicating much more in real time. And it connected with the pain both of us felt about kind of feedback and performance systems, because we had been in the HR space, and what we really saw, we didn't really market this much, although I did write to you about it, folks who kind of got it, because it can be hard to explain, but we saw this classic kind of batch process where, like, the analogy that was made was, oh, lean is a mindset, not for manufacturing, it can apply to software. We started to think, well, how can it can't be applied just to general people management? And because what we saw in all these companies was this very batch system for feedback, which was called the performance review. And it was extremely long and complicated. But even worse, it created all this inventory. And the inventory was kind of feedback that we could give you that you could take action on, that you could do something about to improve the business performance and your own happiness and the teammates. But we don't. What we do is we store it all up in inventory, so it decreases in value, just like real inventory. And we give it to you at the end of the year in one giant batch. And we thought, well, that doesn't make sense. Not for a whole bunch of, like, just for lean principles, but also that's not the way people learn, which I think is kind of the core of lean. Really, it's about how to help human beings learn to work together to get things done and create an incentive system around the learning itself. But I digress. Anyhow, so we started thinking about this in the context of feedback at work. And so we built this system for Ripple, which was the idea that, you know, you would pull feedback rather than having it pushed to you. You could just ask at any time, and you could do it anonymously, and you could gather feedback from folks around you. And then we thought the same thing about recognition, where you could, like, just give someone a badge. We saw them engaging this behavior in email, but why couldn't we make it more public? Just like you kind of had, like, I think the word is Andon. You had these public boards about how people were doing.
Yep.
You could kind of share that status with people and say, hey, you know, here's a badge. And it could be fun and whimsical. It doesn't have to be too serious. But you could also trigger it. And then finally, we started to really get into goal setting. And again, how could we make it more public, more real-time, instead of setting goals once a year, create dynamic social goals that really engage people? So the product philosophy of what we were doing, even though we never talked about it on the website, was really infused by this core idea. Why can't we make people learning about how they can improve more like software people learning in a lean cycle, and then more like, you know, lean in general? Okay, so I didn't answer anything about Eric Ries, so let me just get to that. So as this idea was filtering through, we reached out to Eric, and I said, I don't know how we got connected to the guy, but we said, look, this is what we're doing, and here's why. Would you come on and be an advisor? And he did. He actually became, like, an advisor. He actually, we worked with him for a while, and most amazingly, he introduced us to his co-founder at InView, which is the company he founded and kind of where he learned all these principles. His co-founder was a designer named Marcus Gosling, who kind of got how to design, in a sense, like Eric, and like became this lean startup, this iterative kind of experimenting, learning process, coupled with kind of agile software design. He was really good. He became actually our lead designer, so it was kind of core to how we built Ripple. So that's the connection to Eric, and that's kind of a little bit of the story about Ripple and how kind of deeply within it we hoped was this idea around continuous learning, Kaizen, but for yourself, and how we could apply and kind of unstick this very classic batch process in a big company, make it more flow.
I love it. As lean permeates, you know, past the manufacturing floor. I love how you viewed, you know, the performance review, and you used the word inventory and how it just batches and then it loses its value. I think that kind of frame, that type of worldview is just so valuable, in learning how to do things one piece flow and shorter cycles, a closed loop feedback loop. I mean, so valuable, and you built a business out of it, and I think that's amazing.
Why? Trust me, I can't believe it worked.
And that's awesome. And And you know, the audience of this blog, I mean, we are fans of Dr. Deming, and Deming had had some issues against, you know, the performance review. But I think if he had heard what you guys were doing at Ripple, I think he would have a different view. In my opinion.
Well, I think so too. We were lucky in the history of Ripple to work with a lot of folks that I would consider to be kind of the successors of Deming in many cases, and people who really, I think, who had the same critique of the traditional review, this, you know, piece of paper or this form you fill out once a year. And there's one other part I didn't mention, which was also kind of core to I think Denning also, in God We Trust, Everyone Else Bring Data, right, was the idea that traditional performance reviews have no data, right? Like, from a technology perspective, they're totally, systems that run kind of traditional reviews are totally isolated for the most part from the systems that run our businesses, whether it's a manufacturing system, an ERP system, a sales CRM system, an order entry system. So whatever it is that people are doing their work in this modern economy where we can really know what they're doing, that's where managers manage. The traditional HR systems, even software or paper, are disconnected. And that's part of the reason why people are frustrated with these reviews. Forget about the fact that they're end of the year, that they're late, that they don't really, they're tied to compensation in weird ways. There's a whole bunch of problems with them. They also are frustrating because they seem to lack legitimacy. They don't have the kind of data that we would generate when people are constantly giving you feedback or recognition or whatever it is. But they also are linked to the systems where you run your business.
Yeah. No,
and that was kind of what, that's kind of what led us to actually be acquired by Salesforce.com, by Salesforce. Because we started to see this need. I mean, there was a functional need because a lot of people had consolidated kind of their, I would call it their social software infrastructure, like their message board, their feed, and Chatter, which is Salesforce's community product, was becoming really big and dominant. But the other part was that people kept saying, well, I love this. I love that I can now do coaching once a week. I have all this feed of data. I know what feedback I can give. I can see the recognition this person's got across the organization, like a little information radiator. But you know what else I want? I want to be able to set goals that aren't just like, you know, be a happier, better sales leader or be a better person. I want to set a goal that's a target, a numerical target. And that will allow us to coach people to get better by focusing on behaviors once a time, once a week or something like that. And so we started to see this happen all over the show, whether it was developers who wanted to link Ripple to their, you know, to their GitHub or to their Atlassian systems, or sales organizations or call centers who wanted to link to Salesforce. So that's kind of how we started to reach out and eventually got connected with Salesforce, and we had a pretty clear idea of how we'd add value, and ultimately that led to our acquisition just about 3 years ago, in the beginning of 2012, February 2011, sorry, we were acquired.
Gotcha.
And it's been great. It's been a great experience taking this this idea and concept into a much, much bigger platform, which is what Salesforce is.
Well, tell us about that. So after Ripple was acquired, it became Work.com. Is that right?
That's right. It became Work.com, which is a Salesforce property. And it, more importantly, it became deeply integrated into the core infrastructure, software infrastructure, where like literally millions of service, sales, support, marketing people worked every day. And tons of the data about their, you know, their performance, their qualitative, quantitative performance, the size of their pipeline, the number of calls they're making, the size of their deals that they close, their achievement against quota, the number of calls in their queue, the wait time, the customer satisfaction, the performance of their marketing campaigns. All this data was now existent, and we could build a singular user interface and really, like, quite candidly, pull Ripple away from kind of the thinking of this as an HR tool for HR people, and into the idea, which we hoped was kind of core to lean, this is a management tool, it's an operating tool to think about human behavior, which is that people learn in small, short, iterative cycles. They need constant feedback. They need visual cues of that feedback. They need to collaborate to think about learning, whether, and we call it coaching, but it could be a team. We try to take that and bake it into kind of the number one CRM system in the world, the number one customer support app in the world, and so that people can drive business performance by thinking about people, but do it in a systematic way. So for specifically, you know, you don't have abstract HR goals. You have very specific business goals, but then you can also link behaviors to those goals and say, like, I want to work on, you know, increasing my pipeline, which is a number. I can see it. My manager can see it. I state that goal publicly. I want to achieve it. But I can also think about, like, well, let's work on the number of calls I make every week to increase that pipeline or type of other type of behavior. And I think that, to us, was kind of amazing. And to see that happen at Salesforce is pretty amazing. Seeing it scale up through the organization is awesome. It's been fun. And then also cool has been seeing, you know, kind of that lean thinking, how it exists at Salesforce. You know, Salesforce has been ranked the most innovative company in the world, like, 4 years in a row now. And as an entrepreneur inside of it, watching the organization work, it's really an amazing organization that I think in many ways kind of adheres to many of the lean philosophies around iteration, especially lean startup philosophies, iteration, experimentation, learning, and kind of that to me is pretty awesome. But seeing that done at scale has kind of been great.
That's cool. We are, you know, at the company that I work at, it's called HireVue, and we are huge fans of Salesforce. And I can definitely see some of the elements of lean in, at least from what I saw at Dreamforce, and in many of the blog posts actually at Salesforce. It's you can see the elements and even the language of lean. I believe there was even a blog post several weeks ago about Agile and Scrum, but a lot of the language was really based around, you know, one-piece flow, in identifying these bugs and then attacking them and then making it visual. Really great stuff. Really great stuff. Well, let's switch topics. So you are now SVP of Emerging Technologies. Why don't you tell us about that? That's pretty sexy. What's going on there?
Well, you know, truth is never as sexy as it sounds, but it's a pretty cool job. I have to admit, it's pretty amazing. You know, I think one of the things that Salesforce does is it values learning and innovation. About a year ago, I, you know, Work.com was really integrated well, became part of our sales cloud, actually. And our CEO has an interest in wearables. He said, look, I want to see what we can do, where we can go with it. So what do you think? So I went off and we came up working with our platform team. And I'll just pause for a second before I give you this answer. Just going to give you a bit of background. When people know of Salesforce, they think of it as a Salesforce automation, you know, contacts, leads, opportunities, pipeline, and of course it is. It's the biggest one in the world, and it's the innovator in the cloud. But it's also, as I mentioned, this number one in service and marketing. But what it's also, and many people I don't think fully realize this, is it's a technology platform. So our customers build applications. It's actually, for them, this is how they implement agile software development in many organizations, because it's so fast to iterate apps, build them in a mobile, build mobile apps, to deploy them, all really, really fast. So it's a really powerful platform. Everything that we use to build our own products, the workflow, the security, the objects, everything, these customers get access to it. And incredibly, because Salesforce is an agile iterative business, it's a SaaS company, we update our product every year, multiple times a year, seamlessly for our customers. Every time we update, we also update all those apps. They don't break. You don't have to rebuild them every time the underlying software gets upgraded. So it kind of helps us help our customers innovate faster, get to their customers faster with apps and interaction in a platform context. The other thing is that about 2,500 companies have built their own software products that they sell, independent software vendors, using the platform. Okay, so enough with that divergence. I just wanted to sort of set the context. We're a big platform business. And what we realized is that we could use this platform to help people build wearable applications. So as we started to think about this, we realized lots of wearables coming out. They're incredibly interesting. I think they're going to really revolutionize the way we think about computers, because they're going to help usher in an era of contextual computing, of, you know, kind of the computer is all around us in many different ways. And the computer knows the app that we need, the interaction that we need, and kind of prompts us. And we can do it in a very lightweight interaction. That's coming. Whether it's glass devices, augmented reality devices, virtual reality devices, or, you know, wearable watches or wristbands that can sense us in some way. So what we realize is that because there's so many, it's early in the space of this development. It's very early, right? But it's growing very, very quickly, sort of five times faster than smartphones grew at the same pace. Hmm. It's easy to forget, smartphones, you know, iPhone was only introduced 7 years ago. And when it was introduced, you know, it only had three sensors and it had no apps. It was introduced as a touchscreen iPod, a better phone, and a browser. And over time, the access of developers to a development platform, it created an explosion of apps, new businesses, new opportunities. I think the same thing is going to potentially happen with wearables, because it is a new sensor package, it's a new user experience, it's a new way to build apps, and a new way potentially to transform both consumer experiences but also business productivity. So there's a problem. The problem is it's very early in development, and there isn't, for a lot of these developers, an easy way to connect these devices to a scalable business platform. But hey, that's what we do. So what we did is we went to all the hardware developers, or not all of them, a whole bunch of them, about a dozen at this point, and we got reference applications built. We did a lot of the hard work to think about how you do authentication, connection, user ID in a secure fashion to connect, say, Glass to Salesforce, or Moto 360 to Salesforce, or a Samsung Gear to Salesforce. And we build these apps for a whole bunch of industries, sales, service, marketing, for manufacturing, for medical, just different reference applications. And we, instead of selling these apps, we gave them away. We actually gave away the code. We put it up on GitHub. If you go to developers.salesforce.com/where, you'll see all the apps and documentation and video. And what we did is we went to our community, to these, you know, hundreds of thousands of customers and thousands of ISVs, and said, what are you guys going to build? Use Salesforce as a platform, and here's how you can connect easily to these devices. And it's been great. It's been amazing. We've seen dozens of companies start launching products in whole different areas across sales or service, marketing, and even healthcare in different industries like oil and gas. And that's been kind of what I've been working on. That's the long answer. That's what I've been thinking about and what we've been working on. And I think there's a lean angle, but I'll stop there and see if you have questions.
No, it's super interesting. I'm curious about, you know, when people think of Salesforce, they don't think of, at least I didn't anyway, as necessarily a platform for wearable technology. So, and I understand it's still emerging. Tell us about healthcare. Like, how what is the link there, and what kind of wearable technologies might make sense on the Salesforce platform?
Sure. I think there's a whole bunch of places. You know, obviously everyone knows about the consumer uses of healthcare and wearables, right? That's probably the most popular form, right? The Fitbits, the Nike Fuel Bands, the Jawbones, et cetera, where they're gathering health data of some sort and helping you improve your fitness. And I think where you're going to see that go is better sensors, which are much more accurate, potentially even sort of FDA-approved accuracy to provide a whole bunch of data to your healthcare provider up in the cloud. And that has a whole bunch of spin-off benefits. But I think there's more immediate stuff in a couple different ways. So let's think about like elder care. I'll give you examples of real companies that are building. So for example, using the Salesforce platform, they're connecting families, community care providers, and elderly people with a wearable. So a device that's like optimal, long battery life. And a company called Telemetry has worked to build a product called Safety Care that's kind of like the modern wearable version of I fall and I can't get up. Mm. So it's not just an alert. It actually knows when it's fallen down. And more importantly, you know, allow, say, for extending autonomy of a senior. You want them to stay at home. You want them to go to the grocery, to the shopping mall, the library, but not wandering, right, if they maybe have a cognitive impairment. Yeah. And so you can create geofencing and alerts when that occurs. And, of course, it all links to the service cloud, where we've got, you know, the customer or the client information, their contacts, any medical records, and we can, you know, their call center can manage it. So that's one example. Another would be using wearable glasses to help people with cognitive impairments recognize people better. It's kind of interesting. I never thought about it, but it's a company called Facial Networks. It's built a little app for that on the Salesforce platform, because the sales cloud can hold all the profiles of people that you know and all the information about them.
That's interesting.
Other healthcare examples that I think are kind of neat. We worked with Accenture to build an experience for patients where they can get a wearable device as they enter a hospital. So we built this proof of concept where you could have, for example, a Moto 360 wearable, which allows for voice recognition. So rather than paging the nurse, right, which is kind of a slow process, but also have low information, multiple round trips, you have the patient just say what they need. You know, a nurse, I need a glass of water, or my thing is hurting me. That gets transcribed into text and sent to an alert on the nurse's watch in sequence if it's urgent. And so can allow them to know exactly what's needed and prioritize. So there's another example. Another example would be the use of something called BioNIM NIMI, which is a wearable band that uses an individual's heart rate as a bioidentifier.
Interesting.
We all know about using our fingerprint, but this is like using your cardiac electrocardiogram as an ID.
Wow.
And what happens there is there's a device that goes on the patient's wrist that positively identifies them and then can emit low-energy Bluetooth to systems around it. So this can really decrease in risk of drug giving the wrong drug to the wrong patient, doing surgery on the wrong patient, location of patients in the hospital, right? And then and this is where I kind of think the lean flow stuff in hospitals. I mean, I was just taking a tour of one of my local hospitals. I sit on the board of a hospital in Toronto, Mount Sinai, and I was taking a tour and talking to the emergency room doc. They're stuck for space. They're building a new place. But in the meantime, they're using a lot of lean principles. In fact, he introduced me to one of his colleagues who was a black belt doctor. And I think one of the cool things about wearables and more generally the Internet of Things is as the gurneys become smart, as the patients have ID on them, as the rooms start to sense where patients are, you'll be able to optimize the limited resource that exists in these facilities much better. So whether it's triggering, you know, alerts to move a patient up because the room is now empty and the bed senses that the room is empty and it's been cleaned properly, so we can get better utilization and more turns out of this very scarce asset. I think you'll see wearables in a whole bunch of other places. Oh, let me leave you a couple others. Sorry, I should be remiss to not mention. With Salesforce, we built using a Thalmic Maya, which is a gesture sensing armband. I think Tony Stark in Iron Man or Tom Cruise in Minority Report. And so that device, often you have physicians who want to be hands-free. They have to have sterile hands. So rather than having another full-time paid person sitting in the room, you know, kind of just manipulating a keyboard or computer, the physician can put a Thalmic Maya on their arm, connect it to Salesforce for patient records, and manipulate images and, you know, MRI, even trigger follow-up actions just with gesture without ever having to touch a keyboard.
Wow.
Another example of wearable would be a company called Augmetics in healthcare, where a doctor spends an enormous amount of time just entering data into an electronic medical record system, like a third of their time, and they don't like doing this, and they're very expensive resources, right? Think about them as a machine that you want to keep in flow, right?
Right.
You don't want that machine with downtime, switch over time, while it's typing in notes, and it's also a bad patient experience. Well, if the physician's wearing glasses in this augmented solution, what happens is that secure video link goes back to vetted employees who type down and take records of what's happening. So they can do the typing while the doctor focuses on the patient. It improves the patient experience, allows the doctor to stay more focused and more profitable, frankly, but also actually goes faster. So again, more utilization of that resource. I'm going on and on, but I think there's a lot of applications of wearables in healthcare.
No, I mean, as you're sharing these stories and your vision, I mean, I can definitely see how, you know, wearables can improve the quality of life for patients, but also really improve the quality of the healthcare worker, and ultimately the profitability of the hospital or of the facility. I think that's great. As you were talking, you mentioned Jawbone. We actually interviewed Aza Raskin, who's the VP of innovation there, 6-7 years ago or so, and so he may be someone you want to speak with. He is also a lean thinker for sure, and I think he'd be someone great that you can partner with. We're happy to put you in touch with him if you're interested.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
So, well, we are out of time. Daniel, thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to speak with us. We learned a lot. Love to hear, where people got started on their lean journey, how they've applied lean in their own specific worlds. Love to hear all the interesting stuff that you're doing from Ripple to Work.com to now wearables. We're going to be following you and your all the cool stuff you're doing. And so if there's any listeners that are interested in learning more, where do you suggest they go to?
Oh, yeah, Twitter is a great place. I'm just at @DDebow, DDEBOW. Follow me on Twitter. Feel free to reach out, chat with me. You can also just email me. I'm just DDebow at salesforce.com. I look forward to hearing from everyone.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you, Daniel, and have a good day.
Take care. You too.